interview with Baruch Levy on July 31st, 2006. So you're starting to tell about your parents.
Yes, well, the story goes like this. My parents both were born and raised in Baghdad in Iraq, and they belonged to Zionist and religious families. And at some point they decided to come to the then Palestine to search for themselves, to see whether they can make Aliyah, and you know, at that time there was no all this basket of absorption that was given or is still given by the Sokhnut, etc. Everyone was for himself, and they took this initiative. I mean, my father and two of his friends, also two other men who were also Zionist and religious, etc. They wanted to come to Eretz Israel and to do whatever they were. They have been praying for so many years, V'techezena enenu, V'shuvcha b'tzion, and all this business. So they came, the three of them. You know, they took the road through Syria and Lebanon, and they came up from by car and by whatever carriages. Yeah, indeed. And they came here. They spent a few months in Tel Aviv, in Jerusalem. They went around meeting people. They were also members of their families that they were already here in Jerusalem, living here. They came prior to them. They came 10 years earlier, etc. So what I mean is that even before the establishment of the State of Israel, there have been from time to time some you know, little groups of people who took the initiative, decided to come and to yes, to live here in Israel. So they were here for a few months and decided this is it. This is the promised land, and yes, and they went back.
What year was that?
That was 1930.
1930, so that was really early.
Yeah. Right. 30.
Right. And that was, 1930 was a pretty good time for the Iraqi Jews in terms of their...
I think that was a good timing, yes. Good timing.
In terms of the time, 1930 was a time when the Jews of Iraq were prospering.
Yes, that's what I mean. There was, I think there were good relations with the kingdom there, with the king, and I think some of them were up in the level of the government too. I think at some point there was a minister of finance, Jewish. Yeah.
Peskin.
Yes, whatever. Uh-huh. Yeah, yes. So...
what did your father do in Iraq? What was his profession?
He was... the three of them, very funny, they had, each of them had a kind of a little shop. They were selling drapery.
Drapery.
You know, little things here and there. And when they came later on here, settled in Palestine, Israel, they also opened up this kind of shop. And my father had such a shop here in Tel Aviv until, you know, many
years.
Yes, oh yes, yes. He was there, and he was yearning all his life that one of us, of the four sons, will go in his footstep and take the shop. But we did other things. So that was in the early 30s, and then they went back, and you know, they had to take some time to sell and to prepare themselves and to get also the certificates from the British administration to get the kind of permit to make Aliyah to Israel, and it took them a couple of years, and in between I was born there, you see.
So what year was that? When were you born?
I was born in 33. And they completed everything, and they brought me together with them. We got here in 34, okay? And we settled in Tel Aviv. I think they were what I would think in the economic level, mid-class, even less than mid-class, not not upper than mid-class, you know, little lower. Shop in what then was known at that time open market in Tel Aviv, Carmel Market, yes, very famous. And they make
Carmel?
No, that's it, that's it, Shuka Carmel, and they had that shop. Yeah.
Amazing. Your dad had a great.
And at that time in Tel Aviv, I remember as a little child, there was not that a pattern of ownership of apartments and houses, but you got them by renting them, and there was also a kind of process or whatever that almost every year you would leave the apartment and go to another apartment.
Right.
Yeah,
how was that?
I'll tell you. There is a month by the name of Muharram. This is the first month in the calendar of the Muslims, Muharram, and it was, I don't see any good reason for that, but it was just, you know, to make some changes.
Huh.
And at that time, at the Muharram, and Muharram can happen sometimes in the summer, sometimes in the winter, because
by the lunar calendar.
That's it. They don't have what we have, I mean, in the Hebrew calendar or in the Gregorian calendar also.
Right.
So each time when there was this Muharram, you would see in Tel Aviv, you know, carriages with horses taking the packages or whatever, because at that time not very many people were so rich that they needed some big trucks. Yes. So, and they went from, I'm mentioning it because I remember that we lived, I think, in Tel Aviv at that time, at least in 6, 7 different apartments,
wow.
8 apartments. And each time, since I was the number one child, I had to change the school. So I learned grade 1, I was in one school, grade 2 in another, grade 3 in another, but we, at last we settled in one, and then I finished the primary school in one place. But in any event,
was that a tradition here in Palestine at the time?
Yes.
Or was it something that you brought from Iran?
No. That was here. That was here. Yeah, I
and everybody was doing it.
Yeah, so many. They were, you know, I don't know if everybody, but so many. I remember, you know, that kind of.
Didn't anybody say it? Somebody must have said at some point, this is silly, why are we moving from place to place?
Well,
really,
it was
somehow.
I don't know. I never researched it and investigated it, but it's very interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In any event, we came to Tel Aviv and we settled here, and I think that later on, of course, my brothers were born here. Moshe was born in 36 here in Tel Aviv, and the two other brothers, we had a break. We are four, and we always said that we are two pairs. Yes.
They were born much later.
Yes, because my mother was sick and she had to stop for some time, and then they were born also as two pairs. The difference between them is 2 years. They were born later on in 44 and 46.
What are their names?
Number three is Yehuda, and number four is Shlomo.
Okay.
Yes. And, you know, things develop. At that time, there was the beginning. You know, there were, in this country, there were always security and all these problems and hostilities between the Jewish and the Arabs. Ever since I remember anything here in this world. And between 36 and 39, there was, you know, the 3 years before the Second World War, there were here I would say, a turmoil between the Jews and the Arabs, clashes all over. And the British, they were the administrators of the country. They were from time to time either siding the Arabs, or sometimes among them there were some others who were more like the Jews, and they were, you know, and they did not manage, in my opinion, to administer whatever country was that, or the state, or properly. In any event, they called it in Hebrew the 3 years of the Meoraot, of the occurrences. Meoraot between Jews and Arabs, and the British were in between. So it was a kind of a salad of uneasiness all these 3 years.
Was that influenced by the Germans, because the Arabs are influenced by the Germans throughout?
I believe that they did have, because yes, the Mufti, the head of the Arabs here in Palestine at that time, was in contact with Hitler. This is known. And apparently, you know, these were against the Jews and these were against the Jews, so they had something in common, you know, cemented. But this stopped in 39 when the war broke out, I mean. And then I'm mentioning it because it had something to do with what happened here in Palestine at that time. So, since 39, the Jewish community here mobilized itself to serve the Allies.
The Allies,
the British and the Americans later on. You know, the Americans entered the war in 41, following Pearl Harbor, etc. But since they were here, the British were here, whoever was eligible at that time, volunteered to serve in the British Army. And the percentage of the volunteers here was the highest in the world. There were 30,000 volunteers to the British Army out of a population of 400,000. Meaning
that is the highest percentage throughout all the British
all the world
countries.
There is no country, even the United States or Britain or any, that so the percentage was so high of volunteers to the British or to the Allied forces, which meant that I'm mentioning it because I think the spirit of that at that time in this country was a spirit of voluntarism, a spirit of patriotism, and they left behind, you know, all what they had against the British, the white paper and all the restrictions on the Aliyah, etc. They left behind, and Ben Gurion at that time, who was the head of the Yishuv, he said, "We have to join the military or whatever, volunteer there, as if there was there was no white paper.
Yeah.
And then we'll deal with the white paper later on as if there was, you know. And I think this is an indication of the spirit and the willingness and the high standard of national patriotism that we had here in this country. This was the atmosphere that I grew up as a child here in 39, between 39 and 45. By the way, I was tall, and my father took me when I was 4 years old to grade one, to school.
Oh,
yeah, and
four.
I began at 4:30, and I finished the school, the 8 years of the primary school, I finished before I was bar mitzvah. I was only 12, you know, but I was tall, and then I went, we went to work. I went to work,
I
yes.
Think for
the
high school.
You know, at that time, in Tel Aviv, there were maybe three high schools only, and they were, I think they were A, for those who were better off, and for those who were of that way of life or that upbringing of, going to the education, to the continuing education, etc. But at that time, not only us, but it was just quite common that people, when they finished the primary school, that was that they went either to Hagshama, meaning going to a kibbutz, joining, the underground, even at the age of 15, 16, the Zionists, the Haganah, etc., or going to establish more kibbutzim or moshavim, etc. That was the idea, the agriculture and the settlement was. So schooling was not the number one thing. So I went to work, and only 2 years later, when I was 14, 15, I got back to my senses to say, hey, what is it? And then we went, a group of us, friends of us, of me, we went to the municipality of Tel Aviv, and we asked the heads of the education department to open up an evening school, evening high school. Yes, and that was the number one evening high school that I was one of the first graduates. I mean, I am the graduate of the first batch of the high school.
And you also
asked
them to do it.
Yes. And they put it, they appreciated very much. That was very, it was our initiative, and they, and that was Bet Sefer Tichon Erev Aleph, and this was for us. And we worked in the morning, I mean during the day. In the evening we went to do the studies.
Where did you work?
And no, we worked, I worked in a factory a textile factory. Yeah.
Okay.
I was in the department of the socks. There were so many machines that I was in charge. I think I had 10 machines, and I learned the...
Well, your dad must have been proud because he wanted you to be in the drapery.
Yeah, I don't know.
Kind of
it was in the same field, yeah. And I worked there for some 3 years, I think, yes, yeah. And in the meantime, there were, of course, beside the work and the schooling, there was also a kind of a youth underground that I joined. youth on the ground preparing for whatever. So there were some physical.
Preparing really for the state of Israel.
Yes. That was, we're talking now about what was the year. The year was 46, 47, towards 48. And I was that in that movement, Chagam. It was part of the educational curriculum of the high schools, but it was voluntary, you know, it was not mandatory. So if you wanted, you joined, if not, so I joined, and we had some physical exercises and also some educational training, you know, preparing. And it was very, very interesting and very important, complementing the studies and the spirit that was at that time in the streets. You know, you could even
feel it.
Yes, because it was after the Shoah, it was after the Second World War, it was when there were, after all, so many ships of newcomers who came, in spite of the restrictions of the British, etc. In the first year, they were allowed to enter here. The second year, they went, they sent them to Cyprus. But all this made the Yishuv, the Jewish community here, more united and preparing for the War of Independence. And, you know, there was November 47, and in November 47 there was the United Nations, and I think that was the, in my opinion, that was the beginning of the failure of the Arab approach to whatever is happening here. Why? Because the United Nations offered to divide this piece of land into two,
right.
Jewish and Arab. Okay, so the Ben-Gurion and the Jewish leadership, they said, okay, we think that the entire land is ours and it is written in the Bible, etc., but we should be pragmatic, we accept it.
Right.
They did not accept it. And that was the beginning of their failure. And then they did not accept, and they began the clashes, etc. And then in 48, in May, when the British decided to leave the country, so five military units of five states, five countries, they came from around Israel, from Egypt in the south, and then Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Syria and Lebanon. All these five, they, you know, just imagine, they came from all these sides to penetrating into Israel with all what they had at that time. And here there was almost nothing, because everything was in the underground. We could not have tanks or...
Right. What did you do during the war?
I know. I was only 15 years, so I could not... but we helped. We were some auxiliary, you know. The war was here in Tel Aviv. It was between Tel Aviv and Jaffa, and between Tel Aviv and another... So we were from time to time going, helping the soldiers, giving them some kind of, you know, helping in anything that they asked us. And we felt, you know, But anyways, in 48 there was the declaration, the establishment of the state, and the War of Independence went on. And I think it ended in March 49 by signing the
armistice treaty
between Israel, Egypt, Israel, Syria, Israel, Lebanon, Israel, Jordan. You know, Iraq was the only country who did not, which did not sign anything with Israel. That's interesting. Yeah. Although they did have some units here and they fought.
Right.
Yeah.
They brought them to Jordan.
Yes.
Yeah. Can I interrupt you to go back to your Iraqi roots a little bit? When your parents came here, did they speak Arabic to you, or did you immediately start speaking Hebrew?
I was a year old. I don't. We
the
spoke Hebrew.
We spoke Hebrew right from the beginning.
Ah, yeah. Hebrew.
So what kind of culture did you maintain their Iraqi roots in any way? The food or the.
Yes. Oh, yes. They maintain. Also, there is a Jewish Iraqi language that they
right.
did speak among themselves, but only for a little time. Later on, they spoke Hebrew
yeah.
because they were only later, when in the 50s came the other branches of the family, so they had some kind of reunion and they began from the beginning, you know, language and food and everything. But food was, gradually. Became what we have here, an Israeli kind of food, gradually.
Right.
But in any event, there were from time to time the, the folklore, the religious observance, and the special synagogues of Iraqi. Yes. And you know the music and the cantor, and
right.
I still remember the these things. So. And I liked it. There is a special food that they prepare for Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they prepare it ahead of time on Friday, and they put it overnight in the oven. It's kind of bit. So you know now about the thing.
Yeah.
This thing,
well,
if,
food I know about,
if you have tbit somewhere, I can go 100 miles just to have it.
Really?
Because here, all the four of us, we married what we call Ashkenazi.
Right.
So everything was stopped there
right.
in terms of tbit and all this. But we still are invited from time to time by old-timers and those who... I go, for example, for lunch today to Or Yehuda. You know, Or Yehuda, where Moreshet Babel is. You were
yes.
there.
Yes, I was
yeah.
there.
So there they have some restaurants.
I know.
Iraqi
a
restaurants.
Great one last
yes.
week.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have...
Oh,
yeah. Okay.
So
where were we?
So we're after 48.
48, establishment of the state, etc. And I think that was a very, very exciting time. Very exciting time. And then I had, I was 17 or 17 and a half, and I joined the army. I volunteered ahead of time
mm-hmm.
because I felt all the time that I'm behind, I'm left
yeah.
behind because of the gap of 2-3 years, you know.
A gap of 2 or 3 years between what?
Between my age and the age of mobilization.
Oh, I see.
And the state was established 3 years before I was 18.
Oh,
so,
right, right.
So I felt, and maybe this was one of the reasons when I look in retrospect that I stayed in the army in
yeah.
the career, as a career army. I wanted to pay back something. I
mm-hmm.
felt it was not only this. This was one thing. Maybe it's more psychology, but. It was also another thing. I saw in the early 50s when I joined the army, I joined in the end of 50, at the beginning of 51,
mm-hmm.
End of 50, I saw so many newcomers who came, and
right.
the youngsters who joined the army. They did not speak the language, and they were outsiders, so to speak. And I said to myself, look, I am an Israeli, I am a native,
right.
And if not me and like me,
mm-hmm.
who will take care of all this? Who will, you know, integrate them into the Israeli society? And then I signed for another year and another year, and then I stayed for altogether in uniform. I was 30 years. Yes. And I think that this was also the model for my brothers. Some things were model. One thing is the education. They also went to work after the primary school, but they immediately went to the evening high school that I yes. And Moshe, of course, finished there, and then also Yehuda and Shlomo. They all went there. They worked in the morning, I mean during the day. They went in the evening. It was not so easy, but they made them, all of them, to be more serious, to appreciate things. You know, it's not just easy. You go, you get everything, and you enjoy. But we enjoyed it in a different way.
Moshe had a long career in the army. Did Yehuda and Shlomo also?
Yehuda also. Shlomo was civilian. We were three in the career service, and my father used to joke about it. He was used to say he had four sons, three in the army and one wise.
But so you had no sisters. It was just four of you.
Yeah, that's why I have
and you
three
have
daughters.
Three
In any event, Moshe joined the military 3 years after me, and I was at that time already a lieutenant, and he asked me for a protectia. What was that protectia? He wanted to get into the paratroopers. And as soon as he finished the cadet school as an officer, he went into the paratroopers unit, and he spent most of his service in that division.
Now,
I think, yes.
It's interesting that going back to what you were saying feeling like you wanted to help integrate some of the new immigrants into the army. Did you feel that, so you didn't feel in any way as an Iraqi that you were an outsider? It's actually the opposite. You felt that you were an insider because you were here much before everybody else came.
Look, when you think about it, the process was like that. The first newcomers came from Ashkenazi background. I mean, those who were the pioneers, Ben Gurion and before them, they came from Russia, from Poland, etc. They set the pattern of the way of life, which in my opinion was very important. Because they set here the basis, the foundation for a westernized society. And later on, when people came from Oriental or Mizrahi or whatever we call them, Sephardi, they had to integrate into a westernized Ashkenazic society. That was the idea. So, and rightly so. Because I, for one, I would not want to this country to be an Oriental country and to bring Ashkenazic and Americans and Europeans and to integrate them into an Oriental.
Why not?
No, because I think that a Western society is the society that offers freedom, of freedom of mind, freedom of whatever. Achievement, anything that we know now in terms of economics and social aspects and education
democracy.
And science and democracy, etc., that we know in a West, in the West world. So I think that all those who speak about discrimination or so, they do not absorb rightly the process of integration. Because if you also, if even if you come now from the United States of America, grown up and well educated, etc., and you want to integrate yourself into, to make Aliyah, mm-hmm. into here, and you know the language, etc., it takes time for you, even for you to, you know, to get used, and you feel, subjectively, you feel somehow either isolated or discriminated, or they look at you, or you think that they look at you differently, and you have an accent, etc. So this is something that, as I said before, this is subjective. I don't think that there has been any discrimination. I do not think. I deny it. From my personal, I don't say that, I cannot say that if Mr. So-and-so went to look for a job and he was turned down and he thought that this is because he came from Yemen and the other one who came from Poland, yes, but maybe it was the case because the one who was in charge of the providing jobs or so, who came earlier, he was from Poland. And the one from Poland came to him. They had some common language. He felt, so it was not just because he was black and he was white, and because he was white, he gave him, you know, and maybe I am saying it simplistically, but this is the essence of it. And if you build up kind of discrimination, you cannot solve any problem. You know, you just, you go deep into that, and nothing will happen. So what I was saying when later on I became also in charge of some of these things, as I mentioned, as the advisor to Prime Minister, and I say a few words about it, mm-hmm. I think I emphasized that to each of these, of whoever came and said something about discrimination, I said, hey, my friend, try your luck, try this way and that way, and work.
Right.
Towards that, and if you do, you'll see. And they have so many, examples of achievements and success. It's not, it's in any country. You see in the United States of America, black people who went up, and they are professors, and they are, you know, and they're doing okay if they were given the opportunity and they worked. You know, it's not only, you know, they say there is equal opportunities. What they mean is equal opportunities? The door is open in the university, they say. The door is open for everyone. But what if I did not bring myself to be eligible to enter that door, so what's the use of it's open or it's... So I have to work hard to achieve a level of whatever exam or... you know that.
Well, what about the Mabarot? I mean, the Mizrahi Jews were put in Mabarot for several years, and many of them will say that the government didn't do with them what they did with the Ashkenazi Jews, putting them in kibbutzim and moshavim and settling them in a better way.
Go and speak to Romanian Jews; they will tell you that they were also in Mabarot. I was at that time in the army, and and there were some units from the army who used to be of assistance to these newcomers,
mm-hmm.
to go to the Mabarot, to go to the tents, to help them, to teach them Hebrew, etc. And I know, and I went also at some point to some of these missions, on some of these missions, and I saw not only Mizrahi, I saw also from Romania and from many other European countries who stayed there. But again, they took the initiative earlier. They had some either relatives or so in the, I mean, old-timers.
Right.
Same went for Iraqis.
Yeah.
Iraqis were, I think, one of the groups who left the Mahabharat earlier than others.
That's right.
Because they had people like us who came 20 years earlier or so. They had so many other families, and they had the initiative, and they had
education.
You know, I saw Iraqi people who came in the 50s, and they joined the army. I saw them in the army because the first years I was in the army, I saw them. They were well educated, well absorbed into the military, and later on they became officers, and we saw them, you know, their level of generals and colonels and others, because they, the Iraqi Jews also, they are considered, there is this kind of the Yekes of the Mizrahi
right.
people, because you know the Yekes in the Ashkenazic, they are considered the Yekes, the German Jews, the well organized, educated, etc., etc. So the Iraqis are the same. So I think if we come back to this, so the army. I stayed there, and my brother stayed there, and my third brother also. I think they took the model of me,
okay.
the number one, and it was easier for them. I had to struggle, I had to create or
make your way.
Yeah, and they, and this is good. And so the education, and then the national service. You know, my brother left, I mean, Moshe came up to the top as the chief of the general staff, and the third brother, also he was an engineer, so he served in the armor corps and the tank Merkava. He was one of the creators, and and he was a colonel in the army. He stayed only also for 20-something years, and the fourth brother also is an engineer, and
in the private sector.
In the private sector, he was executive director, director general of a few companies, mainly in the agriculture area. He was the director general of the Kim Avir, which was a kind of aviation company having to do with fertilizing the kibbutzim, the fields, etc., from the air by a little planes. Yes, Kim Avir. Kim is chemical, Avir is air, so it was, and then he was director of council of different vegetable councils, productions, So all our, I mean, education, of course, university level, all of them, and then service, and I think we learned also that we have to work ourselves, not to lean on anyone or to get or ask. We did not get anything from our parents in terms of
help.
Right. Nothing. Yeah. You know, it was so ironic that I got into, I as the number one child went into a permanent little house before them. That was, I remember, Ze'eva and myself, we went into the first house in 55. It was near Tzala. No, Tzala we went, that was the second. But the first, Nebem again, it was also a kind of a military neighborhood, assisted by the military. And still my parents were in the same room that we grew up. I mean, and we grew up in one room, all the six of us. Four sons and two parents, six in one room. And that was so, then we said, I called my brothers at that time. Of course, Moshe was the only one who was, the other two were two, but we sat together and we said, we going also to help our parents to get a better apartment. And only a year or two later, we succeeded to bring them to a better, so which means we did not get anything from them, but what we got, I think, is the that I think atmosphere of I'd say observance of the religious, but it's not only religion but also Eretz Israel. It means the observance of the importance of the country of living here in this country. You know, when my father died and we went to the funeral, and I said on the grave that I thank him for so many things, but one of the main reasons for my thanking him is that he thought of making Aliyah to Eretz Israel, and that all the four of us were brought up here in this country. That was one great thing that he did for us. And of course, hard work. I think we can see it that each of them is settled, of course, all the four of us and also the third generation. There is maybe one interesting point that at some point I was the commanding officer of the youth command. And I made it a point to
youth command, how is that in Hebrew?
Gadna. Youth command, aiming at the preparedness of the youngsters towards the national service. So it was part and parcel of the secondary school. And it was done also in conjunction with the Ministry of Education. So I made it a point that to help integrate the newcomers and the Mizrahi youngsters towards the national service before they join the army in the youth command. And why it was important to do it, because in such an environment they can prove themselves even more than others who were maybe more intelligent or so. Why? Because they had to prove themselves in physical exercises, in shooting, in snipering, in swimming, in jumping, in, you know,
right.
And there you don't need much intelligence for that, you don't need much education, but this gives them that confidence in
right.
themselves, and then through that they would feel equal and then go and complement this by studying. And so during the also I was bringing was pushing them to join from what we call development time towns from Ayarot Pituach and all these low class neighborhoods. So that was.
You would go to these towns and recruit
and
people.
talk to the schools and to the parents, yes. Also, I did it when I was the commanding officer of the military academy. That was military academy preparing cadets for career service. So again, I went.
And those are soldiers in the regular army who were.
No, they were before
the army.
Joining.
Okay.
Yes, during the high school. It's something similar to what they have West Point, but at West Point they're doing it at the higher age of the college.
Right.
We do it here at the secondary school age.
I see.
4 years. And they have the secondary school, I mean the high school education, etc. On top of that, they have the exercise, the military training, and then when they join, they go to the career officers as officers, career service as officers.
Okay.
So also there, I made it a point to bring more of the Mizrahi background and also from the Ayarot Pituach, the development towns.
What were some of the challenges of bringing in those kind of people from those places?
To open the door, the gate for them, to give them the opportunity. I mean, to show them that it can be done.
Right.
Yeah. And then at that time there was following this 67 war in 67. You know, we had this euphoria of, okay, and we thought that this, we did it.
Right.
And now, and it had also an influence on the uneasiness, the social outcry that came following that. I don't know if you heard about the Black Panthers in America.
Right.
So they imported this term. And some Mizrahi leadership here, they went out to the streets. Yes, that was the Black Panthers movement. They demonstrated in the streets again. Golda Meir was the prime minister, and they demonstrated against the discrimination and all this. And you know, there was. When I said I don't. Think that there is, but first they felt it,
right.
And subjective, objective, it doesn't matter, it was there.
Right.
And
what was their chief complaint? They wanted to
get jobs. Again, jobs and the better houses, and they looked, the whites had better than the blacks, etc.,
right.
As in every place. So Golda Meir was. Compelled to set a commission to inquire into the reasons of this discrimination. It was they called it Vadat Rosh HaMishala, the Prime Minister's Commission on Youth, on deprived youth also, Yeladim VeNoar BeMitzuka. Okay. And I was appointed as one of the members of this commission by her. And we worked, I was at that time the commanding officer of the youth command. So I was so called. Yes, I was a resource kind of person in that commission. And after it took us quite a while. And we submitted the report to the government, to the Prime Minister and the government, and the government endorsed the report, and the Prime Minister looked for someone to implement it. So she looked around, she said,
Baruch.
Yes.
Now what did the report say? What were the findings?
Oh, there were. So many recommendations. I remember the number, 127 different recommendations in different areas of education and housing and voluntarism and
Yeah.
you know the
Yeah.
entire yes the entire bank or pool of spectrum of the welfare of the people. And
But this didn't have to do with mixed refugees in particular, it was underprivileged youth.
Yes, but again,
It was mostly
the correlation between the deprivation and the origin was high.
Right.
Yes,
Right.
yes. And I remember, yes, so she went to the chief of staff at the same time. She asked to have me transferred from the military into her office, into her bureau, and yeah, as an advisor on this, as a new job, I took leave from the uniform and I went to her. And when she, in a, there was a press conference when she presented me, so that was for the first time. She said, okay, he is at this, and he has this education, he has this experience, and he has this and that, and he is also from Mizrahi origin. That was the first time when I was 40 years old at that time that I came face to face with the fact that I came from, you know, up till then, and I'm mentioning it because really I didn't feel it, because I felt as one of the natives here, as one of the westernized Ashkenazic,
interesting,
yeah,
kind of
yeah.
Yeah.
And why I was, yeah, I
was
a real, yes, but it doesn't matter. It didn't matter for me whether if my parents came from Baghdad or came from Warsaw.
Like
you
a
see?
Technicality.
Yeah, it was a chance, or you know. In any event, she. But I'm mentioning it because up till 67 and the early 70s, when I was asked to join her office, the security was the number one thing. And because of that, all the social problems were put aside. Following the big victory of, they said, okay, we're done with the security and the safety and whatever. Now we have to deal with the social problems,
right,
etc. And then, so I spent 4 years with Golda Meir and Yitzhak Rabin, who came after her. And Rabin, of course, who knew me from the army, asked me to stay and to do that. For 4 years, I tried to put together some mechanism of programs and planning related to the report that we submitted in order to help the better integration of these youngsters into the community, into the and I think.
Did you succeed then?
Well, we did. Yes. So where were we? Yes, we were at the commission, and yes, I think you know you cannot change overnight things that relate to integration and social pattern. It takes time. I think that it takes a generation and another generation. And we are now in the third generation of the State of Israel, maybe getting into the fourth generation if we take a generation as 20 years. And I think that if you go around and you see what's happening in this country, you will see that the younger generation is easier, it's easier for them to integrate because they have so many unifying organizations, to begin with the kindergarten and then the youth movements and of course the school and the army. In my opinion, the army and the national service is one of the most important national tools
mm-hmm.
for integration.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the say the upper echelon of the army, you see in the general staff, you see people coming from different origins
mm-hmm.
and making their way. There you cannot say that this is a protection or so, because you cannot do that. If you are not, yes, because if you are good, you get up to there. If you are not, you stop at some lower level. It's not the same in politics, but in politics you also see it. If you go now to the Knesset or to the government, you see more and more equal opportunities or product outcome of all this integration. I think the number of Mizrahi people in the Knesset is been growing, the same in the government,
mm-hmm.
and the same in the mayors of municipalities, of cities and development towns, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is a good indication of the success of the Israeli society. Look, this is something unprecedented, you know. To take, if you go, we go back to the beginning, following the War of Independence, in 3 years' time, the Israeli population, the Jewish Israeli population, doubled its number
mm-hmm.
from 600,000 to 1.2 million. It's not, you don't even imagine how big historic achievement is it. Just imagine now, United States of America, the year is 2006. This is a well-established superpower, close to 300 million.
Huh?
Can you even think of absorbing 300 million in 3 years?
Right.
Not in during a war of independence, not and having so much resources, etc. Not take any other country. And we did it then, and then later on another wave, and another wave of newcomers. Just last decade,
mm-hmm.
the million of the Russian and the Ethiopians. And they are here, and you go in the streets and you see that they are becoming one nation.
Mm-hmm.
Language, serving in the army, look in the on television, you see the blacks and the whites. You see the Ethiopians, you see them in the Kravi, in the combat units,
right.
You see them. This is the achievement. You know, I was just now, we went to this trip to Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a haphazardly group which was just registered for this. 40 people,
mm-hmm.
different Israelis, came from so many places. You see that, you see this one from Poland, this one from Morocco, this one. All of them well-to-do, because they are already, you know, those who can afford to go to a trip and to pay the $1,000 and the $6,000 or so, they are okay. But you see them from different walks of life, Israelis, happy,
mm-hmm.
and I think this is another indication of the good integration that is here,
yeah.
has been done.
Now, after these 4 years were over, working with Golda and with
yeah.
Yitzhak Rabin, did you continue to work on this issue later on in your life?
Then I, that was interesting, when the 3 years, the 4 years were over, then the government changed. There was the Likud government headed by Begin.
Okay, so that was 77.
77.
Okay.
In 77, Mr. Begin called me and asked me to stay.
Oh.
Yes, he did ask me to stay, but that was a bit late, because I have already made some arrangement to come over to the States to do
Right.
my PhD. You see?
Right.
So I said to him, Mr. Begin, please understand me. This is after so many years of service, etc. I have here a scholarship and I can go for a couple of years to do this. He tried to persuade me, you see, you know, national service, and I am here and I want you to continue, etc. And it's important. I really appreciated it, but I said, let's do this first. And I went to the States for 2.5 years, as you know, and I came back. I was.
You did your PhD in 2.5 years?
Yes. Yes, that was fast.
Like you did
your Yes, and
most people don't finish master's degree in 2.5 years.
Yes, yes, yes. I came.
I was there for longer. I don't remember because I was a child.
Yes, I came in September 77,
mm-hmm.
and I finished in March 80, and I came back. And at that time, I was appointed as the head of the Brandeis Extension in Jerusalem. It was extension of, you know, they were students coming from America for a semester abroad or a year abroad. So I served there for 5 years, and at the same time, I was the co-director of the Middle East Center for Social Policy,
right, my dad
together with
right.
Lanny Hausman.
You were outside of the army those years.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in 85, I was called back to the uniform to head the National Guard.
Were you
the head of Mishmar Gvul? Mishmar Ezrahi.
Mishmar Ezrahi,
yes.
Okay.
I was called and I served for 4 more years in uniform, and then I left the uniform altogether. Now, since I, if you're asking about my involvement, I am still involved in some of these social issues. I'm serving now as the president of the National Council on Volunteerism in Israel, also as the chairman of the Public Council on Demography, which also had to do with these issues of and
what does that council do? That's interesting.
The council is appointed by the government to help, this is a voluntary council, but to help a unit, that a demographic unit who is in the government, and to help them to bring the public aspects of the demographic issues related to children,
the birth rate,
to the family planning, all this thing, and the
No,
because this is government, so government is also for non-Jews.
Right.
But if, for example, we're talking about counseling. Would-be parents or so, how to put together a family and how to, all this thing, this is very important. Also, some kind of sex education during the secondary school, etc., all this comes under the so I am chairing the public voluntary council, and there is a unit doing the job. I mean, a government committee, yes.
Okay.
And what else?
And now you've established this college.
The college, I am the chairman of the board of trustees of the college.
What is the name of that again?
Here, this is it.
Okay.
This is something very unique. It has to do with training and education of leadership in developing countries. We bring people, the prototype of participant is a person of 35, 45 years old, having had some 15 years of experience in his field as a manager, as a head of something, in the areas of education, health, agriculture, tourism, etc., management of all these things. It is basically management. And we bring them for short seminars of 2-3 weeks to here, to be exposed to whatever they can learn here. And we've been doing it for almost 18 years since I left the military.
Oh.
I mean the uniform.
Okay.
Yes.
What's happening with it now, given the war?
Oh, they're here, they're here. You know, you go see them. They're, we have, you know.
Did they relocate or are they still up there? Where is it?
It is in Misra,
uh-huh.
Which is up there, but
yeah.
We relocated them for some time to Jerusalem.
Uh-huh.
Yes,
yeah.
Because we have some branches. Not only in Misra, but we have also in Jerusalem, and we have in Netanya.
Ah,
it,
okay.
In the,
okay,
so
that wasn't difficult.
Yeah, no.
Now, I want to go, last question, I think,
yeah.
Which I'm curious about, is when Iraqi Jews came here and became part of the, entered the army like everybody else, were they particularly useful in intelligence gathering because of their Arabic, and so in a way they really were able to climb quite
yeah,
high.
I think in the beginning many of them were used for that. Yes, they had you know, excellent command of the language,
uh-huh.
and the way of life and the accent and everything. So
I understood how Muslims lived and operated and their customs
well,
and so on.
They were very, very important contribution to the intelligence and to similar units in other services, yes, in the Mossad, in the Shabak, and all this, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they were very, very helpful. And they made their way very nicely. As I said before, not only in the army, but also in the banking and,
right.
You know.
Great, thank you, Bruno.
Yeah.
That was great.